Welcome to another edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live right here on Giants.com. John Schmelk, Paulie Dottino, 201-939-4513, hashtag Giants chat. Giants getting ready to take on the San Diego, I did it already.
Oh,
the,
my goodness.
It took me 15 seconds, taking on the Los Angeles Chargers
at
MetLife
Stadium.
You're not
the first one to do that this week. I've already done it once, too.
And I won't be the last, either.
No.
I'm sure Bob Papa will do that quickly into the game on Sunday
afternoon. What's the over-under? Twice? Three times?
I'd say he'd do it at least twice course of the game.
And I know Carl's going to do it twice.
They're playing the Los Angeles Chargers, and one of us will do it on the pregame show, too. I promise you that. Absolutely.
Jeff has got my bet on that one.
I agree. He will be first out of the gate. Surprising he didn't actually play for the Chargers everywhere else he went over the course in his league. Anyway, should be an interesting game. We'll take your calls on it at 201-939-4513. A few things I want to touch on before we do start to take your calls, though, Paul. And
yes.
I haven't watched the Chargers offense yet, but I watched the Chargers defense all day yesterday. And, whoo, boy, if you thought, you know, DeMarcus Lawrence was tough, if you thought that Ezekiel Ansah was tough, if you thought Fletcher Cox and Brandon Graham were tough, well, I suggest you go when you watch Melvin Ingram a little bit, because Pro Football Focus has him ranked as the seventh best edge rusher in football, right next to Von Miller. And quite frankly, that's where he belongs. Because when you look at the tape, Melvin Ingram is awesome. And here are a few things that I think we can expand on that maybe can give some fans some education as to how good this guy really is. Throw his numbers out. If you look at him on tape, Paul, there are a few things I think that impress me the most. One is that he does it with both power and speed.
Yes.
And he's not the biggest guy. He's only 250-something pounds. But he gets under these tackles' pads, and he moves them backwards into the quarterback. Number two, he can do it from the left side. He can do it from the right side. He can do it standing up in that Joker pass rush position the way Justin Tuck used to do it. He put a spin move on a Denver Bronco guard in week two where I'm not sure the guy touched him on his way to the quarterback. This guy can do it all. They know how to use him. And, hoo boy, the Giants better figure out a way how to block him because he can wreck a ball game.
He is very athletic, and because the Chargers are not usually regarded as a Super Bowl or playoff contender, he doesn't get the ink.
No.
And it's a shame because the guy's a heck of a player, and you're right, John. What I would say is this. With those kinds of players, the one thing that you do notice is that because they are so quick and athletic and because they've got so many moves that they can put on you, the one thing you can do is pound them in the chest.
You can, and I think in general for the Chargers, and I think we see that based on the fact that they're 31st, I believe, against the run, giving up more than 150 yards per game, he gets upfield a lot.
Yes.
So you can run inside of him,
correct,
get him with screens, get him with draws. That is absolutely true.
Quite frankly, it's also the same thing with Joey Bosa this year.
And that was the next guy I was going to mention. He's pretty good too, by the way, last year's Defensive Rookie of the Year.
Yeah, but I'm going to give you some numbers on this here. This is pretty interesting because when I did my breakdown, I found out that when teams run at the left defensive end, which is where Bosa usually is.
You know what? It's almost 50-50 this year, though, Paul. I got to be honest with you.
He flops.
Yeah.
He flops. But more often than not, he's supposed to be on that side.
Well, whoever's there, whether it's Bosa or Ingram,
okay,
take your pick.
Teams are running for 4.8 yards a carry. And then when they run inside the right tackle, they're getting 5.3 yards a carry. So the bottom line is, you want to attack that side of the line with your run game. Now, if you're the Giants, you feel good about that because last week, DJ Fluker was playing right guard, and Justin Pugh was playing right tackle, and Wayne Goldman was actually able, in one half of football, to gain approximately 50 yards on the ground, primarily from running from the center to the right tackle spot.
Yeah.
That's where most of his yardage came, and it's because of DJ Fluker. He had a good game blocking. I checked with the coaching staff, and they told me his blocking, run blocking grade was good. They were very happy with him. He made a couple of other mistakes in the pass blocking game.
Correct.
Had a couple of MEs. We know that. But his forte is run blocking. So if the line is going to stay intact,
if
it seems to me that's a possible strength for the Giants against a possible weakness for the Chargers.
I agree with that. My question is this. If you're the Chargers and you're game planning here to pass rush the Giants, do you primarily put – because last week, if you look at the tape, the Giants did help on Ereck Flowers' side a lot blocking-wise. They chipped with the running back. They chipped with the tight end, Red Ellison, and Evan Ingram actually chipped a couple times too. Do you think They put Bosa over Flowers, so the Giants have to help there, and Ingram, their best pass rusher, gets one-on-one elsewhere? Or do you think they let them double-team Ingram, period, on that side and have Bosa go one-on-one? If I'm them, I would have Bosa line up over Flowers, force the Giants to help there, and then you have Ingram probably with more of a free pass wherever he decides to rush from.
If I were the Chargers...
I think it's an interesting decision on their part.
It is, and that's what makes them difficult to game plan against,
right,
because they can use multiple looks. To me, I think they're probably most dangerous. If I'm the Giants and I'm looking at this, and what would worry me the most about the Chargers front?
And for me, that's what would worry me if they did that.
For me, it would be when Ingram and Bosa are next to each other.
And by the way, they do that.
Oh, yeah, they do that.
They will stunt on
yes.
that. They usually are. When they do play next to each other, it's usually on the left side, not on the right
Correct.
Side of the line.
And what they'll do is Bosa will be the guy on the inside.
Correct.
And Ingram will be the guy on the outside. And as he said, they're not going to come straight at you. They'll twist. And that's the problem.
Yeah, it's a problem.
Because the Giants have had trouble with the stunts this year. That's exactly the style of defensive front that has given them issues.
And we'll see if Weston Richburg can play this week too, by the way.
Well, we think Brett Jones is a heady guy.
I think he can
pick stuff up. My issue would be on the edges, if they're going to put the two pass rushers together, how do they decide they're going to rush them? With what kind of moves and with what kind of patterns are they going to use against the Giants' edge protection? To me, that's the bigger problem. Let's not kid ourselves. Again, this is a 3-4, which the Giants usually have trouble with. Ingram is a stand-up guy on the front. He's not really a hands-in-the-dirt guy.
Yeah, you know, it is a 3-4, but they almost run it like a 4-3 because Ingram's not exactly dropping in coverage.
That's true.
Yeah.
That's true. But it still is a – the reason you have to still call it a 3-4 is because in a 4-3, that fourth lineman is a lot physically bigger than what Ingram is.
And that's true.
So it still is a 3-4 with your stand-up defensive end, like when the Giants ran it when LT was here. LT was a stand-up defensive end, but it was really a 3-4. That's the problem because, again, they're running against a scheme that they usually don't do well against, even though the Chargers don't have the super premium giant size nose tackle. You know,
no,
like,
they don't.
And that's good news.
Well, they want to get up the field. And I think one of the issues you've seen with the Chargers defense this year when you watch them is that because their defensive linemen try to get upfield so much, they've allowed some big plays. If you find that gap as they're trying to get upfield, you can make some yardage there in the middle of the field. And number two, they play that traditional Seahawks, you know, cover three defense with the deep safety. They have the former Seattle defensive coordinator, former Jacksonville Jaguar head coach, and the name's escaping, Gus Bradley,
yes,
as their defensive coordinator. And they run that cover three system. They're single high pretty much exclusively if you look at them on tape.
Odell Beckham.
Exactly. And I think they'll run that system a lot better than, say, the Eagles did in Week 3 when the Giants played them, and they played primarily cover three. The Chargers' corners don't give quite as much cushion as I think the Eagles' corners did a couple weeks ago.
Yeah, that's fair. But they do give cushion.
Well, it's a cover three defense. The question is, can their linebackers – and this is why I think people underrate about – why the Seahawks defense is so good. Yeah, Richard Sherman's awesome, but it's the way Cam Chancellor and those linebackers cut off those passing lanes in the middle of the field on those slant routes, and I don't think the Chargers are quite as good at that as a team like the Seahawks are, which the Giants will see in a couple weeks.
I'll give you another number that I came up with. Their linebackers, in particular, let's see here.
The linebackers that aren't Melvin Ingram, by the way.
Yeah, really. their linebackers have given up 3 touchdown passes already this season because, quite frankly, they don't cover very well. And that's part of the problem that they have. They will go a lot of cover two in their sub-package, though. They will get away from the single high in the third and long situations. All of a sudden, they'll float the two safeties back because they don't want to give
right.
up the big play.
In third and long, they will. And they actually will do this funny thing where they take all their DBs and linebackers and just line them up in a straight line at the first down marker.
So hit them for the big play early. That would be my
right.
strategy. Take advantage on first and second
run play
down
action and try to get down.
When they're in that cover one, and then get Beckham or Shepard or Ingram getting vertical. and take advantage of that cover three when they got the deep high safety and just absolutely try to make a big play.
And if you send multiple vertical routes in that area between the corners and the safety, you can, if Eli has enough time for the play to develop to throw the football, which is the trick. But really, to me, Paul, these teams are, and I don't want to get too much into it because I'll do it again tomorrow with Lance when I'm on with him previewing the game. But these teams to me are really mirror images of each other.
Yeah,
they both lose a lot of close games. The stat that I thought was awesome, NFL Network and Bob Papa had it. The Chargers have lost 12 one-possession games by 8 points or less. It's the most in the NFL since the start of 2016.
Oh, golly.
And they have the longest active losing streak in the NFL. They lost 9 straight dating back to November 27th of last year. And since 2016, 7 of the 15 Chargers losses over that time have been by 3 points or less.
Now, I'm not one who likes to carry streak numbers over the offseason. You know that. I'm usually not in for that.
I'm sensing a butt.
Well, I thought Jonathan Casillas said something interesting in the locker room the other day, and I hadn't heard anybody mention it.
What did he say?
Until he said it. He said, the truth of the matter is, we haven't felt good about ourselves and won a game since we went to Green Bay and got plastered in the playoff game. And he said, so, you know, in a way, we've kind of lost 5 in a row. Now, I don't usually buy streaks that hang through the off season, but I will tell you, that was a very, very disheartening loss by this team in Green Bay. And Jonathan was openly wondering. He said, you know, nobody's asked us about that, but we haven't been the same since we went to Green Bay and got beaten and beaten pretty badly.
He means the defense specifically or the team?
He meant the defense particularly about their emotions and their attitude and their feel about themselves. Because let's face it, Aaron Rodgers shredded them pretty good in the second half. We know about the DRC injury. But that was not a good showing. And that was the first time, basically, in more than half a season that the Giants defense did not play lockdown defense. I mean, what Aaron Rodgers did to them in the playoff game, that's something that we hadn't seen in like almost 3 months, because they went through 3 months of outstanding defensive football when they moved up to the top of the NFC defensive rankings.
Right.
And then all of a sudden in that playoff game, that second half, they looked very mortal, didn't they?
That's a good point. And I think, too, you can erase what happened last year pretty quickly if you come out in that first game and you do your thing and you can kind of wipe it away.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll equate this back to the Chargers again. When you come off a season when you can't close games and you lose in heartbreaking fashion time and time again, and then the first 2 weeks of the year you have a chance to tie or win with a field goal in the final seconds and you don't, that's when I think when what happens the following year sometimes starts to creep in. And by the way, lost to Philly by only 2 points last week. They pumped after they scored a touchdown to make it a 2-point game. The Eagles ran out 6.5 minutes of clock on them by running the football, and they almost ran for 200 yards on the Chargers, much like the Eagles did against the Giants. So, like I said, the Chargers and the Giants here, very, very overall similar teams.
Yeah. You know what I wonder, John, too? And maybe it, you know, Jonathan just struck a chord with me when he said it the other day, because I really hadn't thought about it much. But, you know, Bill Parcells used to talk all the time about how you have to win preseason games. I think he won like 75 preseason games during his career when he was with the Giants.
Right.
And he would say there's a habit to that. There's a feel-good feeling about winning. He used to put a big premium on preseason games because he said, I want my guys to feel good about themselves. I know it's the preseason, but I'm trying to give them a taste of goodness and joy and enjoying the fruits of their labor and just having a very positive, energized kind of like, hey, this is really good. He used to think that there was a big deal to that. And I understood it in those days, but subsequently, because teams have been benching their starters so much in the preseason, I pretty much said, well, I don't know if Bill's theory works anymore because the starters aren't playing much, so does it really matter? Well, let me ask you something. What did the Giants look like in the preseason this year? Not so good. I wonder if maybe they had given more emphasis, maybe is the word, to instead of maybe just looking at players and trying to figure out who belongs on the team, maybe if they had put a little bit more into we want to feel good and we want to win and we want to be a team, and maybe, just maybe, that might have stunted some of this malaise that the defense is feeling right now? I don't know. It's just, it's an interesting thing to ponder, if nothing else.
No question about it. One other note before you get to your calls at 201-939-4513. This is from Art Stapleton, his Twitter feed. I decided to choose Art. Why not? Jason Pierre-Paul, Weston Richburg, both missing at Giants practice. Also, apparently, there was no music during drills for the first time all year. That's something new. Paul Perkins, ribs.
Yesterday, there was a lack of music in one of the drills early, and it was very surprising. It's the first time I had noticed that, so I guess he's doing it again today.
Paul Perkins on the stationary bike. He, of course, has the rib/chest injury. Vernon, ankle, working on the side with the training staff. Odell Beckham Jr. was practicing, but Art notes headed into the building as media access was ending after brief discussion with trainers, worth noting. So those are the big injuries for the Giants, and they're big ones. I mean, these are really, really important players, Paul. And if you don't get pressure on Phillip Rivers, he's savvy. He knows what he's doing. He's going to eat you up, especially with those two quality tight ends they have, Hunter Henry and Antonio Gates.
You know my middle name is Trenches. And right now, the offensive line is nicked up and the defensive line is nicked up. And that's not something that would make me very happy on Sunday.
201-939-4513. It's an important game for both those groups. Let's go to Bash in Ohio. He's up first. What's up, Bash?
How are we doing, John? What's going on, Paul?
Doing great.
Hi.
Bash. How are you?
I'm good. I'm actually happy. I'm the first person to call, and I was trying to be the first one. Paul, I wanted to talk about some numbers. So I called John. John's brought him to talk about some numbers. I've been listening to the show all week and listening to the media about Giants being 0-4 and stuff, and I just wanted to talk about this number. I felt like I was on. Feel like it was teal blue kickoff, not big blue kickoff. But I wanted to what about the Giants being 0-4? I'm going to some numbers as far as last year. Minnesota went 5-0 and ended up the season 8-8. So it's big. And the thing as far as 0-4 and only team that ever went to the playoffs 0-4 was 92 Chargers.
Yep.
So
yeah, but Bash, you understand why the Vikings went from 5-0 to 7-9, right? Because they lost their entire offensive line due to injury. If they would have stayed healthy, they would have made the playoffs and maybe even won that division.
Oh, okay.
Just saying.
I also wanted to go as far as the Eagles. Everybody talk about the Eagles. They're 3-1, but I believe last year they went 5-1 or 4-1 at the end of the season, 8-8 bottom of the division. So I'm not threatened by the Eagles at all. So Carson Wentz started off fast last year. So either the Cowboys are 2-2, and they have to count Packers this week. So that's a possible loss, right? You know, if we beat the Chargers, we're one game behind the Cowboys, where everybody had winning this division. So,
well, Bash, in fairness, I think just as many people at the Giants winning the division as the Cowboys, to be quite honest with you.
Bash,
I know Vegas had it. I know Paul was talking about as far as Vegas having the Cowboys winning the division, and they're possibly going 2-2, possibly go 2-3 this week going against the Packers. So I still like the Giants' chance. I think everybody's listening. I've been listening to this show all week as far as being sticking a fork in the Giants in the media and talk about not making the playoffs and talk about next year and firing people and making personnel changes. I still have belief that the Giants can make the playoffs as far as I still have an option of that. And I was listening to Paul and Rush yesterday as far as that everybody had the record of 10-6, but the Giants are 0-4 right now. And who said that the Giants still can go 10-6 or at least 9-7? He just will take it one game at a time. And that's it. I also wanted to ask one question for both of y'all. I know that y'all both had the Giants being 10-6, but where did y'all have the Giants at after week 4? I know, Paul, you had the Giants beating the Cowboys week 1, but where did y'all have the record after 4 games?
I had them at 3-1.
I don't do it that way.
Going to 10-6.
Bash, thanks for the call. I don't work it that way. I mean, well, the way I think about it, I'm like, all right, I figure they'll split with Philly. I figure they'll split with Dallas. I don't know which game they're going to win. You know, I figure they'll, you know, maybe they'll sweep one of the NFC East teams. I'm not the guy that goes through the schedule and goes, that's a win, that's a loss, that's a win, that's a loss. I don't do that. That's not the way I operate. I'll say, well, you know what? They have 3 games. Chargers at Denver, Seattle. I think they'll win one out of those 3. You know, and that's kind of how I'll do And look, I think when people are trying to figure out the disconnect here, Paul, for why they're 0-4 when people like us were predicting 10-6 before the season, and I think to me the reasons are fairly simple, and I'm going to run through them real quick. One, they haven't stopped the run when I think everybody thought they were going to be an excellent run defense this year. Number two, I think injuries have been a much bigger factor than they were last season. Mm-hmm. You know, Odell Beckham missed the first game, and he wasn't the same in the second game until he finally woke up in game three. I think that was a big issue. I don't think anybody predicted that the tackling and the drops would be the type of problem that they were. I mean,
it's bad.
It's brutal. It's really bad, and that's execution on the field. As to Bash's first point,
I didn't expect the two punts either in the fourth quarter of the last 2 weeks.
Bad special teams play.
Unbelievable.
I mean, these are things that I don't think we expected heading into the season. And the defense in general. I mean, they're 25th in yards allowed. They're giving up 24 points per game. And this isn't because of the offense putting them in bad spots either, where the Giants are turning it over on their side of the field. The offense has actually been pretty good about that. They haven't put the defense in the bad spots this year.
Bash, I'm going to address just two of your points real quick. Mm-hmm. All right, first off, you got to look at the Eagles right now because they're a full three games plus a tiebreaker ahead of the Giants in the division. The way the Giants have started out 0-4 in the conference, it's going to be almost impossible for them to win a wild card against someone else in the NFC because they're already 0-4 in the conference. So you're going to have to win the division. Somehow win the division if you're going to be a playoff team.
For the wild card tiebreaker, is it common opponents before conference record, though, right, if I'm not mistaken?
Well, it's common opponents within the division first.
How about in the wild card? Is it conference first?
I believe it's conference
You first. Might be right about that. I didn't remember quite exactly.
You know what? There's so many. But
whatever the case might be, if you're 0-4 in the conference, odds are your common opponents record is going to be very good either.
Yes.
Correct.
So to me, don't worry about Dallas and Washington being a game or two games up. It's Philadelphia right now that's really the thorn in your side because they're three games behind them with a tiebreaker to boot. That's the team you want to lose every week right now. Don't worry about Dallas and Washington. Neither one of those teams is going to win 10 games. Don't worry about them. Worry about Philadelphia right now,
yeah,
and that surprises me.
I'll tell you what, Washington has been pretty impressive to me. They played really well against the Chiefs last week in Kansas City, and they're undefeated.
In terms of, I thought Washington would be the Giants' toughest challenge in this division.
And look,
so
Josh,
what the hell do I know right now?
And look, Josh Norman's out, and that hurts them. But their defensive line, it looks like it has taken a step in the right direction.
They're playing better. But to the other point to what you said, if you really want to think about how the Giants can turn things around, go back to the 94 season. It was Dan Reeves' second year at the helm. The Giants came out of the box. They were 3-7. 3-7. And they look like no hope in sight. Dave Brown was the quarterback. He wasn't really doing very much. The running game was suspect. He wasn't getting anything going in the passing game. The Giants proceeded to win their last six games in a row, finished up at 9-7, and lost a conference tiebreaker for the wild card to the Chicago Bears. And the Bears went to the playoffs, and the Giants wound up staying home with a 9-7 record. But when all was lost at 3-7, you have to admit that's a bad record. 3-7, everybody says, you have no chance at all. Why bother playing? And they won six in a row and were in the conversation the last weekend of the season. They needed things to break, and it didn't happen.
That's the type of thing you need to do this year now.
That's the way it's going to be now. That's just the way it is.
201-939-4513. Jaleel in Virginia?
Hey, how are you guys?
What's up, Jaleel? How are you?
Oh, this is a first-time caller, long-time listener. This is such a cool experience, you guys. I just want to say thank you for taking the call. But I'm calling because, I know we're 0-4. I know, a lot of fans are – I know how New York is. I know how it is. The fans aren't, they can be a little tough on us at times. But I still have a lot of faith in this team because since the player's on it, as coach always says, talent men of integrity. But, we played some tight games last couple weeks. But I want to point out a couple of things you guys have talked about, too.
Sure.
That is, obviously every week we talk about the offensive line. But I think we've played better in recent weeks because we've actually had some changes up on it. Obviously it's because of due to injury, but I think forcing us to change certain personnel has caused us to play better at those spots. But also, Eli's been getting the ball out a little faster, I think. I think that's been helping us out. I think, and like you pointed out earlier, Wayne Gallman being able to run between the tackles on the right side, that has worked well. And I want to point something out is that you guys remember Justin Pugh initially coming out of college? He was actually a tackle, and we moved him to guard. And he played a lot better at guard, but now that he's been back at tackle, he's been excellent, I'd say. He's holding his own very well. And I just want to say that I think, obviously, we talked about how Flowers don't want to move him yet or how that's going to work. But I think maybe if we, gave him some more confidence being good at other positions on the line, you know, it would help him at tackle. That's something I thought about, too. I'm not trying to, you know, I know his technique still needs some work, too, but I just think that we have to start trying to change a couple of things up in order for us to find those little pieces of success. So, that's kind of where I stand on that. And I think we have a really great chance of winning. I know we're going up against a great front in San Diego, but I think we have a really great chance of winning and
sure.
And getting confidence back in our team.
Hey, look, Julio, you're playing an 0-4 team. You better at home. You better have a great chance of winning the game.
Oh,
doesn't
boy.
Mean it's going to be easy. And thanks a lot for calling. Thanks a lot for becoming part of the show and being one of our loyal listeners. We appreciate it. I mean, you've had a lot of movement on the offensive line now. People have been asking for offensive line changes. Well, you've had more offensive line changes the last 2 or 3 weeks than anybody would have even, I think, wanted. Between Jones being a guard, then being at center, Hart being out, Pugh moving to right tackle, being a left guard, Jerry moving from one side to the other, Fluker coming in. I mean, you've had almost every possible configuration you can imagine except for Flowers staying at left tackle. And I think the last 2 weeks you saw improvement. I think last week, Eli's ability to move in the pocket and keep his eyes downfield masked some issues in the first half. I thought he did a great job with it, and I think they have made a scheme adjustment in terms of against the Eagles getting rid of the ball quicker. And I think chipping more against the Bucks last week, especially on Eric Flowers' side, mm-hmm. I think you put all those things together, I think you're seeing an improvement in the pass protection. But this will be, from a tackle pass rush perspective, the biggest challenge the Giants have faced so far this year.
Yeah, the guys on the edges, yes, I agree with that. And it's a shame because I think Eli Manning has actually had a very good month of football. And
I don't think, against Dallas, maybe he took a little while to roll into it, but the last 2 weeks he's been great.
Great the last 2 weeks. I thought he was still pretty good the first two.
He was okay.
But if you look at the whole body of work, 1 month of football, I would take that any day of the week. And it's a shame that it's been buried in an 0-4 start because – the quarterback, who a lot of folks figured at age 36 may show some signs of decline, hasn't really shown signs of decline. In fact, he ran pretty good for that touchdown last week, didn't he?
That's liberal use of pretty good. He got there, and that's what matters. He got there.
You know, I said to Russ yesterday in the program, I've never seen anybody slide with his shoulder first like Eli does.
He still can't slide. It's amazing. Years later, he still can't slide. Because I don't even know if that qualifies as a slide. Like, if he would have hit the ground there and the ball would have came loose, it would have been a fumble.
It's happened.
I know. That's why I brought it up. And, in fact, it's happened against the Eagles.
Yes. I said to Russ, I wonder if time during his youth that he even tried playing baseball. So where a baseball coach had said to him, this is how we slide in baseball. You might want to use this as a quarterback.
It's almost like he can't decide if he wants to try to go head first or feet first. And he just goes horizontally. He goes horizontally. I've never seen someone slide horizontally before. It's crazy.
Very odd.
Yeah, it's very funny.
It almost defies physics.
Travis in Queens. He's up next. How are you, Travis?
Hey, fellas. How you guys doing?
Hi. Doing well, Travis.
I mentioned Jason Pierre-Paul yesterday, and Paulie and Russ. They said it was a wacky call. So my question is,
I don't necessarily call it wacky, but I think you were saying that Jason wasn't given effort, and that's hard to say.
He gives effort every game. I'm not saying he doesn't give effort, but my question is, we paid him like a top five defensive end, did we not?
Yes.
Is he playing like a top five defensive end?
I don't think you're getting the production you would have liked to see out of him so far this year.
He's definitely off to a slow start. No one would argue that.
Right, but that was my point I was trying to make.
Well, then I apologize to you. We misunderstood. Because it sounded like you were questioning his effort, and I think the guy plays hard, and he hates coming off the field.
Right, and on top of that, like you, because I was listening after I got the hook, but I contradicted myself by his effort, by saying, you know, like he gets the pressure. But I'm saying to myself, like, the pressure is good. I'm sorry. The pressure is good. But, you know, as a fan and when you watch, you prefer sack over pressure.
Well, and Travis, I think the last couple weeks you haven't seen enough pressure out of him either, for that matter. And I think the other thing is that one way we've always talked about Jason, and I think fairly, is that he's one of the few great two-way defensive ends in the league. He's really good against the run, too. And too many times this year, I've seen teams run that stretch play to that side of them gain yards. In years past, JPP's a guy that would shut that thing down, and you wouldn't get anything. So I think he's part of that issue, too, with the run defense, if you want to look past whatever you're getting out of him in terms of sacks.
It's very puzzling. Yeah. It really is.
It really is. I don't have much of an answer for you, but he looked great in the preseason. Great.
Now, I would tell you, according to the NFL's official stats program, JPP, amongst defensive ends in the National Football League, is 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. He is 7th among defensive ends in the NFL with 17 combined tackles.
Okay. That's actually very good.
All right, so now there are 32 teams, so 64 starting defensive ends, plus guys who come in on a three-man rotation, to be 7th in the league in total tackles, that's a pretty good ranking, isn't it?
But where are those tackles coming?
But that's not average, though. I'm saying
it's a lot above average, is what it is. I think for me, the problem is, I'm going to tell you where my bigger problem is. After four games, only 1.5 sacks. But again, I don't want to lean my hat on that, because I tell you that's not right to do. 3 quarterback hits. That's not good enough. I want to see more hits on the quarterback, even if they're not sacks, because, as I said, hits, hurries, and pressures can be very effective. Those numbers, which a lot of times don't show up in everybody's, you know, web stats boards, those numbers need to be a lot higher than what they are.
Yeah, and the other thing I'll throw out there too, Travis, real quick, and again, their grades are their grades, take them with a grain of salt, but Pro Football Focus, which usually has him ranked as one of the top defensive ends in football, traditionally they have really liked JPP as a player. So far this year, they have him ranked as the 90th best edge player in football.
Wow.
So they see a downtick too.
And then one more point, like on third down, you know, I think a lot of fans, when we watch, we get upset, like with the Eli Apple and with the coverage. But a lot of times it starts up front, and the defensive, like, you know, as the saying in the NFL is, a corner can only cover for 3 seconds, top. So, you know, when these quarterbacks get about 4 to 5 seconds, that hurts. You know, and it's harder to cover after that. But you bring up the streak. So you say you don't like bringing up streak.
Not when they cross over the off seasons. I don't think usually they hold much water. Usually.
Why not? And then you guys, you would make mention about the performances from a player from last year. That's what we look at that carries over into this year, by saying, like the Giants should be winning.
Right.
Division.
Well, I think when you look at like what Michael Kay likes to say, the back of a guy's baseball card, you have to have an anticipated level of performance based on the guy's track record and his resume. And usually that's not just done over 1 year. It's done over the course of maybe 2 or 3 years. And you say, okay, this is relatively reasonable to expect this type of performance out of this kind of player. That's a lot different than saying a streak. It's a lot different.
Thank you, Travis.
Okay, that makes sense.
Appreciate the call, buddy.
And by the way, the other number where JPP is not doing anything, zero passes defensed. He is a master at knocking balls down at the line of scrimmage.
And here's the other thing that Pro
Football – and he's got none so far.
Here's the other thing that Pro Football Focus tracks. They track not just quarterback knockdowns. They track hits, hurries, and pressures.
Right.
And so far this year, they
have
ranked 2 sacks, 1 hit, 6 hurries.
Oh, see, the NFL stats have him for 3 hits.
Well, do you know why? They count sacks as hits.
Yes.
So they count the sacks and the hit number. You know what I mean? So
they're not doing that.
Well, no, obviously not, because they separate them. So if you have 2 sacks and 1 quarterback hit,
the reason
you
I
have
don't,
3 total hits.
I don't think that's a good way to do it, because when you sack a quarterback, you hit the quarterback, and that hit has impact on the quarterback.
Well, yeah, but that's why they have the two stats next to each other. It's like a pass deflection and interception.
Okay.
You know what I mean?
I understand. I understand. But
you know, because technically, an interception is also a deflection. No?
Yes.
But when they count,
well, it's a pass defense.
Well, but I'm not. But they're not. They're talking.
They don't do it that
they
way.
They separate them. Exactly.
I got you. But I don't subscribe to that.
But the bigger point is there. The bigger number there is only six hurries. That's an issue.
That's a problem.
201-939-4513. And the other thing we have to ask now, I think, too, is he playing hurt? Because, you know, he never actually went down on the field with an injury. But all of a sudden, he hasn't practiced for two straight days. Has he been fighting through stuff that we don't know about? Maybe he's been, and maybe that's why his production isn't what it is.
And he is.
I don't have the answer to that.
He's not one to complain, John.
No, he never complains. So maybe he's been fighting through injuries. I don't know. 201-939-4513. Andre in Rochester. Dre, what's up, man?
Hey, how's it going, guys?
Doing great, Andre. How are you?
Well, it's really hard to stop the run when you're out there after going out from the offense all the time.
Hey, Andre, do me a favor. I either hear your radio or computer in the background. Can you turn that down for me so I could hear you better?
Yeah, I said it's hard to stop the run when you're out there, like after the offense was just out there. They're going three and out, and they're hardly getting time to go over the surface and the new plays, and they're back out there.
You know, I appreciate what you're saying because I'm one of these guys who does believe that time of possession is a big factor.
I'm going to check that right
now. And when you look at the opposing teams are averaging over 32 minutes a game.
32-28, that's what it is.
In terms of time of possession. And when you see that number, you say to yourself, you know, the defense is out there an awful lot. I mentioned this to Carl Banks 2 weeks ago. And Carl's comeback to me was, well, get a turnover. Get a takeaway. Get a three and out yourself and get off the field.
Yeah, right now the Giants are holding the ball 27 and a half minutes a game, which means the defense is on the field for 32 and a half. And not even the turnovers, Paul. And I'm going to go back to this number too, Andre, and I think you do make a fair point. The Giants' defense would be on the field a whole lot less if they weren't allowing teams to convert 42% of their third downs.
Which is
last year, they were around
number.
34 or 35,
yeah,
which is a much better number. The Giants' defense aren't getting teams off the field like they did last year.
I just said on the first and 10 taping that we just did for MSG this afternoon, one of the ways you get teams to get off the field is you get a turnover. That's a great way to get your defense off the field. Rip away a fumble. Get an interception. Guess what? Your defense goes to take a rest.
And the only guy that's been doing that, Landon Collins, has those two forced fumbles, and that's pretty much
that's
it.
That's it.
Yeah.
Zero
and JPP
picks.
The first week had the strip fumble.
But they have two fumble recoveries and zero picks. That's not good enough.
And you think there's something wrong with the running back rotation? It seems like Eli's confidence is based off of the running back that's in.
No. I don't think one has anything to do with the other. I think they need to block a lot better. And when you take a look at the tape last week, there were about four runs in the first half. Well, Paul Perkins, if he was Jim Brown, he wouldn't have had a chance of gaining any yards. And I think Gallman, frankly, a big reason he had more success is that he had a lot better blocking on a lot of his carries. I don't think Eli's confidence has anything to do with the
running. Eli checking into a different play, don't you think?
Well, sometimes Eli does check into run, sure.
All right, guys. I'll let you guys go. Thank you.
No, all good, Andre. No worries. I don't think Eli's confidence has anything to do with our running backs back.
No,
I really don't.
I don't think so at all. He does have a point. There's no doubt that if the offense would be able to get some first downs and not have so many three and outs, that would help the defense not have to get off the bench and run out onto the field.
And Paul,
but that doesn't excuse them not getting off the field.
This is the week to do it. I mean, you look at this Chargers team. Offensively, they're 29th in the league running the football. They've been brutal. Now, they've played some really good rushing defenses in the Broncos, who are the top rushing defense in the league, and the Eagles, who are the second-best rushing defense in the league. And the Chiefs are also, by the way, pretty good against the run. But defensively, Paul, they simply have not stopped the run. In fact, I think they're tied for the Giants in last in terms of yards allowed per game, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah. And their rush offense is only getting about 60-something yards.
67.5 yards per carry.
And their offense has only got about 27 minutes a game time of possession.
That's what I'm saying. What am I saying about these teams being mirror images of each other?
Their stats are eerily close together across the board, offensively and defensively. It's so scary. You know, they've got Phillip Rivers, and he's been the bulk of everything they do offensively. Giants got Eli. The run problems. Rush defense. John, it's scary how these teams are so identical, and they're both 0-4. What a shock.
And the way they've played, folks, this game's going to be close at the end. I mean, odds are in the fourth quarter it's going to be a one-score game, and we'll see what happens.
Oh.
You'll survive. It's okay, Paul. Julian in Florida. He's up next. Hi, Julian.
Hey, Johnny Schmelz, Pauly Dots. How are you guys?
Hi.
Doing well, Julian. How are you?
Good, good, good. I want to touch on a couple of things.
Sure.
And then I just wanted to ask you guys a question at the very end.
Absolutely.
Okay, so defensive end, JPP, Olivier Vernon. You know, the sacks are not as high, at all-time high that we expected with the big money we gave him. But I heard Pauly Dots say something yesterday. It's very true. They put a lot of pressure on the quarterbacks, and that's not what
usually
know, people are accounting for.
Yeah, but Julian, they haven't.
Not
they,
so much right now.
They haven't the last couple of games. I mean, Jameis Winston probably hit the ground only two or three times all week last week.
Yeah, they need to do it. They had some pressure the first 2 weeks, but the last 2 weeks, it's really subsided.
And again, I think a big part of that is Vernon's injury, too. I mean, he tried to play last
yeah.
week. He wasn't the same. He got hurt early in week
really
three, and he wasn't the same.
He really fought.
I hate to ruin your day, but what if JPP and Vernon can't play in this game
and
someday?
That's a distinct possibility right now based on what they've done at practice so far.
Now what are you going to do?
I'm also thankful for Snacks, which people are not mentioning, how great he's doing. He's doing good, and the rookie, Dalvin Tomlinson's not doing bad at all either. I mean, like, we're talking about edge rushers. I understand that.
Yeah, but they're not going to help Kerry Wynn and Romeo Okwara get to the quarterback. They're just not.
Yeah, that's true. But I understand that. But, you know, I have confidence in Romeo Okwara. He did great in Dallas last year when Dallas came to our house.
Romeo Okwara is a guy who's got a skill set that makes him a qualified NFL player. But until he's able to break out and have two or three or four games in a row where he's able to make some more.
Anybody can have one good game.
Splash plays, you know. You can't count on him to be that third guy.
Now, I will say this, Julian and Paul. I thought last week Steve Spagnuolo did a great job blitzing, and I thought their blitzes got home, and when they did bring pressure, it tended to get there. I thought they did a great job with that.
More often.
But against really good quarterbacks, you can't rely on blitzing all the time. Eventually, you're going to get burnt.
Good news for them is that Rivers is much more stationary than Winston.
That's correct.
Winston
correct.
Did have enough
he's
mobility.
Not running out of the pocket very much.
When they did blitz a lot, they absolutely got there better. It wasn't great, but they were better, and then Winston would get away. Rivers is not going to get away.
No, Rivers is like Eli.
Yeah.
Exactly. He's a pocket. He's going to stay in the pocket.
Right.
Most of the time. Another thing I want to touch on. Everyone's talking about McAdoo and the play calling and everything like that. Another thing that Pauly Dots touched on yesterday is that the execution, I think it was, and the other guy, Rush, he was touching on the execution. How funny was it in 2014 when Tom Coughlin wasn't going for it on fourth down? How much the Giants fans say, you know, he's too conservative. He doesn't go for it.
Right.
He doesn't do this.
Good point.
And now, you know what I'm saying? And then Ben McAdoo decides to go on fourth down. I mean, ideally, that wasn't the right time to go for it on fourth down, but if it would have been the other way around, they would have ate him alive.
There's always a second guesser in the room, okay? And he's going to have a very loud voice. And a lot of people are going to join in the chorus. And they're going to sing their song. That's just the way it goes. I'm more interested, as I said on The Fan this morning, I'm more interested in people who said at the time, should he go for the field goal or not? And if not, which I'm kind of in the camp of, I was okay with him going for it. I didn't necessarily like the play.
See, I figured you would have been a get-the-points-on-the-board type of guy.
I'm more Parcells. Let's impose your will on those guys.
See, now,
let's teach them a lesson. Let's make a statement.
Right,
let's do something here.
If it's fourth and one,
and
I get
remember
it.
Correctly, and if I remember correctly, McAdoo went a lot for it. I'm sure you guys have the stats. How many times did he go for it on fourth down last year?
We'd have to look it up.
And it worked to our favor.
We'd have to look it up.
Yeah, I don't know off the top of my head what they were fourth down percentage. Do you have those numbers in there?
We'll look it up right now. So you go ahead if you had another point.
I just remember correctly that it worked. It worked a lot. Sometimes it didn't.
That up here.
But he wasn't conservative. He went for it a lot last year, and it would do good for us. So ultimately, I'm trying to say is.
Oh, you have it there. Okay.
You know, I'm sorry.
Here's the thing. Okay.
Well, Paul, what were the numbers?
I don't think, but I think. To the point, while you do that, I want to make this point. I don't think you can make a blanket statement about fourth downs. I think it's unfair because fourth down situations are always dependent upon the conditions that you're in. It's the field conditions. It's the way the game is going. It's what the score is. It's how much time is left. It's who's on the field. It's
they were 9 of 19 last year, 47.4%.
It's field position. There are how much you know. There are so many factors involved in every fourth down decision. I don't think you can make a blanket statement, but I would tell you
game situation especially.
No question.
Right.
But I will tell you, it is ironic at how much heat Tom did catch on a regular basis for his fourth down decisions compared to what we're hearing now with Coach McAdoo. I will tell you, you're right that there, it is kind of ironic, but I think.
Thank you, Julian. Appreciate the call, buddy.
To be fair, you must look at every fourth down on its own merit.
Correct. Everything's an individual situation. Absolutely. Though remember, in Tom's last year here, when the defense couldn't stop anybody, people were killing him for going on fourth down.
And quite frankly, in almost all cases, I agreed with him.
I did not have a problem with what Tom did his last year.
He knew ancillary conditions that made him go away from the book. And football 101 doesn't apply when you know that your defense is operating like Swiss cheese.
Ancillary conditions. I like it.
Yeah.
Well done.
As opposed to complimentary football.
Let's go to Jerry in Boca Raton. Hi, Jerry. How are you, buddy?
Hey, how are you, John, Paul?
Hello.
Great, Jerry.
Hey, listen. I'm one of those guys that I'm calling back because I said last week on Friday – when you're on the 3-inch line, what you do, and this is a follow-up to it.
Okay.
I think you'll agree that football is a coach's game. And I think that
players.
McAdoo, as a relatively new head coach, has too much on his plate to evaluate what personnel to use and what plays might work in the same way that he had when he was considering what to do when he was only responsible as an offensive coordinator. Now he's distracted by many more details of managing the team. For example, when you're on the 3-inch line, you put in a package of guys, a jumbo package, whatever you've got, and you run the ball. You don't throw a pass because the odds are in your favor, even if you don't make it. Now, if you're on the 5-yard line and you've got goal to go, maybe you throw a pass. But I'd like to know when he's going to throw a fade to Brandon Marshall like we used to see with Plaxico Burress.
I'm waiting for that one, too, to be honest with you. I think that's a fair one.
I'm thinking right before the season began, this is what we're going to see, and we don't see it. And the problem that he has is he's got so many things that he's evaluating that he doesn't put in the right personnel to try things. And if you're going to think about these things ahead of time and play situational football, then you're going to react to it. And I think he had the other advantage as an offensive coordinator. He was up in the box. He could see the plays. He could see what was going to happen. He could plan ahead when the defense was on the field, and then he was prepared. Standing on the sideline, he doesn't have the same perspective. You don't quite see things in the same way, and you're not thinking about it. And I think what he ought to do is designate Sullivan as the offensive coordinator, oversee it, and maybe put in a veto for a particular play or change the play, but he needs to have that opportunity to be able to see what's going to happen and get a good perspective on the plays.
Okay. I will refer to a comment I have made for the last 2 years, a general philosophical comment that I believe a head coach should split the play calling duties because I do think there is too much to handle to do the entire pizza in one gulp.
Thank you, Jerry. Appreciate the call, by the way. I got 3 more calls I got to make sure I get.
And I continue to feel that way. And by the way, I don't know exactly. I still haven't found this number, John. How many head coaches in the NFL right now are calling their own plays? I think it's only about a half a dozen. And I keep trying to find that list, and every time I sit down,
well, hold on,
I don't come up with it.
Let's do it real quick, okay? Let's do it real quick.
Well, it's Shanahan, it's Reed.
No, we got to do it organized. We got to organize. Let's start in the NFC East, okay?
Okay.
You have Jay Gruden and McAdoo. That's two.
Right.
NFC North. I don't believe Caldwell's definitely not calling plays in Minnesota. McCarthy is calling plays in Green Bay.
Yes.
The Bears obviously know, and the Vikings know, because they're both defensive head coaches. In the NFC South, Sean Payton, is he calling plays?
Yes.
Sean Payton, 4. Dirk Cutter is not calling plays, I don't believe, right? Ron Rivera is not calling plays.
No.
And Dan Quinn is not calling plays in Atlanta, so you're at 4. NFC West, Pete Carroll's not calling plays. Is Kyle Shanahan calling plays? I believe he is, right?
Yes, he is.
So that's 5.
Yes, he is.
McVay is also calling plays for the Rams, so that's six.
McVay is calling them?
Remember, okay. They had the shot of him looking at the play sheet, sitting on the thing.
Okay.
And then who am I missing in the NFC West? I'm missing a team.
With Cardinals.
Bruce Arians is calling
plays,
isn't he?
Yes, he does.
So that's seven. Yes, so we got seven alone in the NFC.
I thought it was six, but seven.
Okay. So let's go to the AFC East now. Adam Gase, I believe he is calling plays for the Dolphins, right? So that's eight.
Okay.
Todd Bowles, no. I know. That's why I wanted to do it. Todd Bowles, no. Belichick, no.
Right.
Bills, no.
Okay.
I don't think, right? I don't think.
No, and no one in the AFC North.
Marvin Lewis, no.
No.
No, Hugh Jackson?
I don't think he is.
Do they have an offensive coordinator? Let me see.
I don't think Hugh Jackson's calling his own plays.
Let me see. Hugh Jackson. The Ravens are not, obviously, and the Steelers are not. Let's see. Of course, that does not come up. That's because I searched high Jackson.
Problem is, too, just because the guy's the offensive coordinator doesn't mean he's calling the plays.
Well, I'm just
seeing. That's the problem.
I know. I'm just saying Hugh Jackson calling plays, and I'm going to see if anything comes up for that.
Yeah.
I'm not sure if he's calling plays or not. Hugh Jackson is calling plays, I believe. Okay, so that's up to nine then, right?
Wow.
Right? That's nine also because we were at seven. Okay. We had one in the AFC East and one in the AFC North. So we're up to eight.
Okay.
And of AFC South, Titans, no. Jaguars, no. Colts, no.
Don't think so.
I don't believe so.
Don't think so, Texans either.
And the Texans, is Bill O'Brien calling plays?
I thought O'Brien did not.
You could be right about that. Let me see. That's the one guy I'm not sure about because he is an offensive coordinator.
Let's see.
Bill O'Brien will not hire OC. Will continue to call plays January 18, 2017. So, yes. So, we're up to nine. AFC West. Jack Del Rio is not calling plays. Andy Reid is calling plays. So, you're up to 10. San Diego Chargers. No, they have. No. They're not calling. I don't believe he's calling plays, right?
No.
And then, what team am I missing in the AFC West?
Say the Raiders?
Broncos.
Oh, Broncos.
And he is not calling
no.
plays.
So it's a third.
You're a 10th. Third of the league.
It's, you know what? A third is still not a ton.
No.
I thought it was a little less than that.
10 out of 32.
All right. It's less than a third, actually.
And now I just took up everybody's time. That's why I'm on hold here. Sorry
but
about
you know
that,
what?
Guys.
No,
but now
we
know.
We did it.
Now we're a 10.
I'm glad we did it.
Now we're a 10.
But, you know, it's still the minority.
Yep. Jay in Brooklyn. Jay, you're up next. How are you?
Hey, guys. You guys had a guest on over the summer before the season. I forgot who it was. I wish I want to give him credit for this.
Yes.
I don't know if it was the English guy from Pro Football Focus or somebody else. He had when you guys were talking about defense, bringing it up, how do you think he thought that they would play well, right? That he says they should be good. He says the two things he was concerned about, though, was the fact that you had a couple of guys coming off career years and you had a lot of guys coming off a career high in snaps played. Do you think, I know, Paul, you're always big about how, you know, football is a cumulative sport, cumulative hits and all that. Do you think any of this from what this Pro Football Focus guy said is carrying over to this year to where guys are not playing as well this year versus last?
I don't think it snaps, to be honest with you,
yeah.
Especially in the defensive backfield because, you know, the cornerbacks and stuff play all these snaps all the time. Could it have an effect on Vernon and JPP this year? I would think no. I like the first part of the explanation better. I know you asked Paul. I'm giving you my answer first.
No,
sorry.
It's fine.
No, it's cool. Both of you.
But
yeah.
I think the idea of it being a regression to the mean might be part of it. Well, you know, a guy's not going to have a career year every year. You know, they can still be good, but not as good as they were the previous season. I think it might have more to do with that than it has to do with guys being fatigued from last year. That's my opinion,
right.
At least.
Right. As a fan, when you look at the defense, it's pretty easy to diagnose what's wrong. I mean, you know, the Giants came into this season looking for, you know, bigger years from their young guys, i.e. Eli Apple, Darian Thompson. These guys are going to step up and have better years than
hasn't
last.
Happened,
that
has
hasn't
it?
Happened.
And in general, Jay, in general, what you like, and this is, I think, what helped the team last year, a lot of the Giants' second-year players last year took a big jump. We have
correct.
Not seen similar jumps from the Giants' second-year players this season, except for B.J. Goodson.
Yeah.
Right, but then also with the older players, like Casillas. Casillas was everywhere last year, all over the field, all
he
over the
He had a career year. He did.
And you don't see that this year. And also, you know, Vernon, again, I mean, he's a tough guy. You know, plays
very
but
tough.
He's breaking down again. JPP breaking down again. it's a little, it's becoming a little bit of a cycle here.
I think the only thing that I might say that could be part of this is that maybe because they played so great last year, and Coach McAdoo always says, like everybody else does, it's a new year, you got to start from zero. Maybe some of these guys felt like, you know what, we have such a great unit and we are all coming back for the most part, that maybe they just thought they could roll the ball out there and it would work again.
Or maybe they're so confident they're freelancing too much. And like, I want to go try to make a play and they're not, you know, filling their responsibility. And Jay, thanks for the call. I got two more guys I got to get in.
You know, if you have one guy do that, it's not so bad. But if you have a bunch of guys doing that, they're out of position.
And again, I don't know if any of those are true. Paul and I are just really spitballing.
Neither one
right
of us
now.
Do.
We're spitballing. Adam in Ohio, he's up next. Hi, Adam. You got to be quick for me, okay, pal?
Hi, buddy. Two things real quick. I think the 32.5 versus 27.5 time of possession average is very misleading. I think that was grossly skewed by the Dallas game, and I believe we won in Tampa Bay time of possession.
Yes, that is accurate.
Yes, that's fair.
Secondly, I know I was critical of Paul Perkins last week. Roll back the tape between the 8:35 and the 8:45 mark. I believe it was in the third quarter, but if that's after he got hit, it might have been in the second. There's a run to the left. It's well blocked. He has a foot race with a linebacker. There's a vast amount of space to his left. He loses the race. I think that's a tackle that both Darka, obviously was hurt, and Gallman break, and they make a lot of yards out of that particular run.
Adam, I know exactly the play you're talking about, and if there's one play that I would point at where maybe he didn't make the most of what he could have, I think that's a fair one to bring up.
Yep. Fair enough, then. I just think the other guys do a little more with the opportunities they're given, but hopefully they can continue that momentum and Gallman can continue to break out. Thanks for taking the call, guys.
Thank you, Adam. And I want to say this, too, and I haven't been on all week, and I've been dying to say this to somebody. I was excited about Gallman last week. Yeah. He put the ball on the ground twice in 11 carries. If the other team recovers those fumbles, that's the only thing people are talking about this week. They're not talking about the 11 for 42. They're talking about two lost fumbles. One, the Giants recovered. One, the Bucs did not review, which I think if it was brought to review, I thought the ball was out before his knee went down, in my opinion. And if they're recovered by the other team, that's all we're talking about today. That's not to say that Gallman's not going to help the running game and he's a good downhill back, but until that first part gets fixed, the second part doesn't matter. Right?
I understand what you're saying.
That's all I'm
and
saying.
Quite honestly,
I've been dying to say that to somebody all week because nobody's talking about it.
He ran for 40-plus yards, now albeit in only about a half of time.
Correct.
And so that's fine too, but you know, usually we save this kind of praise for a guy who's run for 230 and three touchdowns.
And more than 4 yards a carry.
That's how low the bar has been set for this running game lately.
201-939-4513. Final call, Brian in North Carolina. Brian.
Hey. Thanks for taking my call, guys.
You got about 45 seconds. Go ahead.
The show today, you know, we're building fan equity right now. You know, being 0-4 is not fun, but you know, looking ahead of the schedule, if we can get this win this week, just get that first one, I think I think we can look at the rest of the season, except for Denver and Kansas City. Every one of those games seems winnable to me, at least 50-50. And,
In fairness,
we're 0-4, 4-0. We got to win those games either way.
Brian, in fairness, you could have said the same thing about the last four games, too. They were all winnable,
No doubt. But, we spent a lot of time second guessing the coaches and everything like that. And as fans, you know, we have the joy of not having to worry about that stuff. We just get to turn TV on or go to the game and root for the best. And I'm going to be doing that again this week. I know a lot of my friends have starting to cash it in on the season. I think the season's just begun. I think we're going to get this win this week, and I'm going to make a prediction. I think we're going to hit Denver in the mouth. I think we're going to make a statement in the Denver game. I know this is some crazy optimism, but I believe.
Good for you, Brian. Thank you, Pat.
I will say one thing on the back of his call before we sign off. If the Giants should somehow play well enough to earn three consecutive wins going into the bye week and are 3-4 at their break, if they should somehow do that, and to do that, they're going to have to play well.
Really well.
Okay.
You got three pretty talented teams.
Then suddenly, John, they're coming out of the bye at 3-4 playing the Rams and the 49ers, and I got to be honest with you.
No, the Rams aren't what they have in the last couple years now.
No, but they are coming here.
Yes.
I'm suddenly thinking there's a lot more oxygen in their lungs. That's all I'm going to say.
And I think that's fair. I agree with you. If they play well enough in the next 3 weeks to win their next
three, you have to feel differently.
Against three good teams, And I could argue, and again, I know the Chargers are 0-4. You know, I like them in the offseason, so I'm a little biased towards them. But three teams that have talent, if they are good enough to win those three games, I will feel much, much, much better about this team in the second half having a chance to pull something off that special.
Correct.
That's it. Tino, Schmelk, Meadow and I tomorrow. We'll see you then. Have a good one.